This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
That's what I've said. The blind must be led, the hungry must be fed. Hey, yo, your Lord, I'm looking through a whole despair over the earth. Hey, yo, nobody care. Take a look in my house. Would you live in there? Huh? Hey, yo, your Lord, look at my shoes. Can you see my toes? But that's all the struggle goes. Nobody knows. Look into my eyes. Tell me what you see. Can you feel my pain? Am I your enemy? Give us a better way. Things are really bad. The only friend I know is this gun. Listen to my voice. This is not a threat. No, you say the nine. Are you worried yet? You'll be talking about. You want the world to see. But when you show us hope, we will show you peace. Look into my mind. Can you see the wealth? Can you tell that high? Wanna help myself, but if it happened that, I'll stick you for your ring. Don't be mad at me, it's a survival thing. Look into my heart, I can feel your fear. Take another look, can you hold my stare? Why are you afraid of my younger face?
Hello and a pleasant good morning, and welcome to another episode of Guardian Radio in the AM. And I am your host for today, C.A. Nuri. In this Bahamas, our society, our environment, our culture creates and builds men. You know, it impacts our character. In the main, our society tends to develop good men, decent men. But there are a few who have challenges, right? And we see that now with the crime that is happening, with this proliferation of gang war, this gang mentality. We see it in our schools. We see it in our homes. We see it in our streets. We see murder. We see death. We see blood. And I want to know why. And there is a cry from the inner city youth who are begging our religious leaders, our politicians, and society in general to say, look, look into my eyes. Do you feel what I'm going through? And if you don't feel and understand what I'm going through, that the blood will continue to shed. Because it's a survival thing. Right? I want you to know if you in Oakdale understand what is happening in our inner cities. As they cry, as they complain, as they become desperate, as they find solutions to their problems. They beg you and say, look, look into my eyes and tell me what you see. Do you feel my pain? Is it that I am your enemy? That things are really bad and the only friend I have is this gun in my hand? Perhaps this is the reason for the violence. So today I brought my own crying interrupter. I use that word purposely because I know the government is hiring crying interrupters now, giving them big salaries, but I brought my own. Someone who I grew up with, someone who understands the street, someone who can give a testimony on, is this a survival thing? Is it that because things are so hard that our inner city youth is doing the only thing they have, the only thing they see, the only possibilities for them is crime. They're angry. And as angry people do, they lash out. So let me start the show because I know I started a little late and I want to introduce my crime interrupter, who is a friend of mine because we grew up together down the road. I tried my best as a youngster not to know him, by the way. I dodged him. I didn't talk to him. I frowned at him. And over the years, I've become to be able to trust him, depend upon him, and call him friend. And today I'm going to have a different type of show.
a show that will investigate what is happening in the inner city and why would a person want to join a gang and what causes them to join a gang. So perhaps we can go to that core, that source, and interrupt it there. I'm not sure if any of the crime interrupters who they hired ever was in a gang, right? Ever felt the sting of the streets, right? But I know this gentleman has. He has lived it. He has survived it. And he, even though he may have his own struggles, he continues to overcome. And I need to find out, what did he do to survive? Because he was destined to die. His story was written. The idea that he is here, thriving, means that God had to intervene. Means that society had to intervene. And I want to hear that narrative. I want to hear his story of growing up, living off of East Street. Then they said, there's nothing good could come off East Street. There's no good people off East Street. They're a bunch of crimesters. That's where all the killing happening. You go off Hay Street, you go off Woods Alley, you know, they shoot people there. There's rob and kill. Right? So I want to hear about his growing up, his family life, about his mom and dad, about going to school, about what happened to say, you know what? I'm going to join this gang. So I introduced to you Valentino Brown. And in the streets, when I was younger, we used to call him Scrooge, the ugly duckling, right? The mobster, you know? So introduce yourself formally, Scrooge, for me, and I want to hear that story.
Good day to everyone, but I want to congratulate you, Mr. Nuri. I should call you Dr. Nuri on a well-done introduction on your show today. Look into my eyes, tell me what I see, you know? It's a song that came out exactly the same time, and we were gangsters on the street. My name is Valentino Brown, a.k.a. Scoochie or Scrooge, and many other nicknames I have on the street. And like Mr. Nuri said, you know, I was a gang leader, one of the gang leaders in the Grandstown community. I was one of the originators, founders of the group called the Border Boys. We were actually the third gang developed in the country. But before that, they were just bad boys in the streets of Nassau, serious bad boys like Lelongs, Rasta Bike. Both of these gentlemen are two of the most prolific criminals the Bahamas has ever seen. These guys used to shoot at police stations, shoot police officers, rob banks, and et cetera, and give to the poor also. But at the end of the day, there were problems in society. And during this period, we were young kids in the community of Grandstown. So like I said, before the gangs came around, there were serious bad boys who were out there who were men in society. Yeah.
So I've seen my first Texas with already saying that perhaps you had no daddy at home. That's why you went to pursue crime.
Yes.
Now, I want to know your home life, how growing up.
You want to know my home life. Okay, let me start real quick because we have a short time period, so let's try and make it as quick as possible. I was born in the year of 1974. According to my grandmother and the residents who reside in the community, they told me my mom was on drugs, crack cocaine. And they told me why I was in my mother's womb. My father was being persecuted for a serious criminal offense, the charge of murder. He was convicted. Why I was still in my mom's belly. And I guess they said that when I was born, he was sentenced to lifetime in prison. So if you ask me how my life started off, well, that's how my life started off.
Did you ever meet your dad?
I met my dad at the age of 27 at Fox Hill Prison.
You met him in prison for the first time. The first time you met,
yeah, first time
you were in prison and he was in prison.
Yeah, I went to visit.
So let me explain that so everyone understands what happened.
I ended up visiting him in prison.
Okay, you went to visit.
Yeah, but I was in prison not knowing him before that on remand.
Mm-hmm.
But I never met him while I was in prison.
So what made you decide to say, let me go visit my daddy?
Well, something strange happened was my auntie Ruth Meadows. She told me my daddy heard that I was in the gang and was going. All he could hear in prison was my name ringing, how terrible I was, how bad I was. So as a concerned father in prison, he couldn't assist me while I was on the street because he's in prison. And, you know, so I guess by him hearing all the details, because prison is where information is traveled,
mm-hmm.
And he and our son, Mr. Terra, was on the road. So I guess he felt in a type of way that the best way he could help if he could have a word with me. So he told my Auntie Ruth Meadows to ask my grandmother, Olivia Brown, who's now deceased, if they would allow me to come see him in prison.
What do you think about that? I mean, I can imagine that first conversation. Oh, your daddy wants to see you.
When they said to me, honestly speaking, I know if he's out there listening, I don't want him to feel no type of way. It didn't mean nothing to me, you know. It didn't mean nothing to me.
But so why are you going?
Yes, man, because, you know, there's something inside you. You know, you still have a connection. We can't explain it, but there's still a connection. That's still my father. So I think in my genes, on my DNA, I still have to be respectful to him and go see what he has to say. So it's basically my genes, my DNA.
It's a connection. You felt that you needed to be respectful.
Yeah, I just feel that you need to be respectful.
So what did he say to you?
He told me,
I don't want to know all your personal business.
Yeah, he told me his situation, and this way I get a better understanding about his situation, because I thought at first that he just neglected me. I didn't know, like, prison life, you know, foster concern, that didn't concern me. I needed a father. I never saw him, not one day in my life, you know, walking me to school, teach me 2 plus 2, you know, take away, you know, how A, B, C, you know, comforting me when I have my little problems, you know, and as I grew, you know, I have my girlfriend problems, and sometimes I need someone to lean on just to talk to, but no one's to talk to, so all that boiled up inside of me. So with all that, he was trying to tell me that, you know, he would have been a better father to me, he would have been there for me if he didn't make the mistake of, you know, bad mistakes that he made that cost him his freedom. And he explained to me that, you know, he tried his best while he was in prison to do what he can, but ain't nothing much he could do while he was in prison. So, you know, when I really started to talk to him, then I look at the fact that he was in prison, he made a mistake. You know, it cost him, you know, but it also cost me, you see, because each human being, if you look at Jesus Christ, you know, he had Mary, and he had Joseph, and then he had God. You understand? So, there's no one can say that, you know, a father or a mother, you know, that don't mean nothing. You know, you do things because you want to do things. And why Christ had Mary and Joseph? Why you think?
Yes, he needed shepherding.
He needed someone to guide him. So I ain't the no one out there talking their foolishness about, you know, that's the decision you make. Yeah, maybe. But anyway, you know, he explained his case and they get to understand. And I felt more better. Mm. And that's where our communication skills got better.
So, as a young man, did you miss and crave your father, you think?
Fathers are important. You know, they are important because it's like this. If I live in a community, my grandmother took me in. That's the one who was my mother. That's the one who was my father. My auntie is my uncle, Barry Brennan, and Lillian Brennan. You know, she's an immigration officer. And my uncle, Barry Brennan, he's a former police officer. They were like my mother and my father to me. You know, they're the only ones who were good to me, like who I could reflect to and who I respected, you know, and who gave me, you know, some of my upbringings.
And mentoring.
Yeah, they were my mother and my daddy. Yeah, what were we saying now?
So we're talking about how you, if you missed your father growing up.
Of course I missed my father because, Mr. Nuri, I'm a young man. I used to end up being out around 12, 1 o'clock. Yes. You think if I had a father, I would have been out 12, 1 o'clock in the night, breaking in. Huffers and Sons, breaking in. John Bull.
Are these places still open now? So I don't know. I don't want you to put the word hypothetically. No.
Years ago.
Hypothetically, you used to do these things. Yeah. Huffers and Sons.
A bunch of us. Yeah. You know, a bunch of us. You know, this kind of stuff we did. But you think if I had a father figure who was in that community, you think I'd have been roaming the streets? Let me give you a prime example. In Africa, right, they move. There was a herd of elephants. I can make this real quick. Mm-hmm. Real quick. There were a herd of elephants, right? So there were some older elephants in the park who were the monarchy of the park. And you had the teenagers, the juveniles. So they wanted to conservate, and they separate the big bulls, and they left the juveniles. It's the first time they all see this reaction in the animal kingdom, where a peaceful animal like an elephant started to kill rhinoceros and any other animal in the vicinity, these juvenile elephants. So they asked what the problem was. So a guy who understood, you know, about the animal kingdom and about humankind said, you remove the parents and the guardians from the elephant field. If you want to see a change, bring back the old elephants. Mm-hmm. The minute they went back and they brought the old elephant back in the reserve field, do you think those juvenile elephants were still running wild and rampant? The father sets a tone that the mother can't control. Mm-hmm. You see, when the mother says something to a child, especially a boy child, and he starts to be disobedient, the minute the father speaks like a lion, the child obeys immediately. So it takes two to raise a child.
And your two was interrupted.
Your mother
was not there, and your father was not there.
Right.
And then you had to go basically find yourself. Your mother did the best job she could. I mean, your grandmother did the best job she could with the limited resources.
Yes.
But how was your economic life? Did you have the tools and money to basically pay for the things that you needed?
Listen closely now. It's a tricky situation. My grandmother, my auntie, my uncle, like I said, she survived her own. She had her own problems. She had, I think, about 9 children. 2 twins, 1 dead, so she ended up with 7. Mm-hmm. And she had her spouse, but they were not married. And them two break up. And after they broke up, she took care of 7 of them. So she was able to instill in them, you know, get your education. Even though she couldn't read and write. My grandmother couldn't read and write. Mm-hmm. But you couldn't steal from her. Because she put us and sent us to school. And she would let us come. But anyway, the whole story is she couldn't read and write. So she taught Lily and Barry and Yvonne how to go there and get a good education that the government would be why. They were able to go to school and they were able to become police officers and immigration officers. And then they were able to give the little that they had to me, who was not their responsibility. Mm-hmm. The little they had, they would give to me. They would make sure I eat, at least roof over my head. Mm-hmm. You know, but there was a lot missing. A lot more was missing from my life because when I look around, at least they have their mother, which is my grandmother, and they have one another who's brother and sister. But for me, it seems like, you know.
By yourself.
And my brothers and sisters, they got talk from my mother because she had 5 other children after me.
Wow.
Right? And they were taken away. My grandma took me away from her because she was a responsible parent. Mm-hmm. The minute I was born, my grandmother took me away from my mother and told her, you go outside and you do what you have to do. Mm-hmm. You know, because you're responsible because she used to leave me unattended or stool up, you know. And my grandmother come to check on me. Mm-hmm. She's seeing these things, so she ain't bothered with that because I'm the first grand in the family. I'm the oldest grand in the family. So she pushed her away. She took me under her wing, and she took responsibility for me.
See, and I believe that, and the purpose of my show is that your environment impacts your decision.
Yes.
And I would like to know, at what age, what was happening when you said, I'm going to join a gang?
Now, mind you, in the community of Grandstand that I reside in, remember I told you they were bad boys. Mm-hmm. In the community that I reside in, it was the drug era. Okay? This is the height of Alcohol Anonymous. Before, there was crack cocaine or serious marijuana problems in the community. We had Alcohol Anonymous problem. There were a lot of our first drug problem in this country was rum. Could you remember? There's that Alcohol Anonymous. And many of our residents used to be drinking. During that time, it came to crack cocaine. Crack cocaine is like 1970, 1969, 1970. And this is where it started to destroy the family value of Bahamians. What I mean about Bahamian family life, I'm talking about a mother, a grandmother, a grandfather, a mother, a father. You get the granddaddy and you get the grandfather. Then you have the aunties, the uncles. Then you get the cousins, the nieces, the nephews. So you get a whole family structure and the godmother. All this get destroyed when the drug epidemic started to take effect in our country. The family structure started to destroy because mom was on crack cocaine. Daddy was on crack cocaine. Grandpa them on vodka or Bacardi or some kind of thing. So all our values start to decay in the country. And this, in turn, produce us because if I'm in my mother's womb and she's on crack cocaine, I don't know if my father's on crack cocaine or marijuana. He had to be in on something. All right? And this wasn't just me. This was thousands of kids in Mason Edition, Benton, Camp Road, the inner city community of Angleston. So this is a mix. You understand what I said? So me, I'm considered a crack baby. Because when my mom and my father was conceiving me, they was taking drugs. So I was already affected. You understand? I was already affected from the day I was in my mother's womb. I was already affected. You understand?
Yes. So, yeah, and I need those, the powers that be, to understand what we are going through in the inner city. That a number of kids are going through this at this present time, especially dealing with this marijuana thing that we're going through. And crack cocaine is still an issue here in the Bahamas.
Yes.
But again, I'm going to ask the question, at what age?
At what age? At
you
what
age joined the gang.
Okay.
That's a bad one.
Yeah, I'm just giving a little time for you so you can understand.
No, I appreciate
so,
that.
So I'm going up from 1974. 1975, I was 1 year old, so we growing up. So as I get older, say 1979, 1980, 1986, I was in T.A. Thompson. I graduated from T.A. Thompson. This is when the gang academics started to start in the country. The gang of choice around that time was a gang called the Syndicates. This is the first major gang in the Commonwealth.
Briefly, one sentence, tell me what you knew of the Syndicates. Because remember, we were both at T.A. Thompson. You were ahead of me.
Yes.
Right? And I remember passing a test for a private school, and my mom said, Cecil, you're not going down, Davis. Whatever it takes. She started working three jobs. I stopped seeing my mother for about 6 months. Because when I got home from school, she's ready to work. And I wanted to know, briefly explain what the Syndicates, so I could get the story of what happened.
Syndicates is the first major gang in the Commonwealth of the Bahamas. They were situated across Wolf Road, down in the Big Yard area. That's where the Chinese restaurant on East Creek is in that area. That's a Syndicate area. In that group, the guys who were nasty, I forget some of the leaders. Pussycat was the leaders.
What age bracket these people are?
These guys were actually around the age of 19, 20.
So they're young men?
Yeah, young men.
Yeah.
Yes, because this is the first major gang. Yes, they were the first major gang. And they had hundreds of members. And that influenced the Rebellion Raiders, which is the second major gang came out. And they suppressed the Syndicates. The Raiders actually dissolved the Syndicates and took over. And they were able, they were the biggest gang in Nassau. They had thousands of members. They had members in Fox Hill. They had members in Angleston. They had members in Carmichael Road. Then the whole of East Street, starting from Ross going to go back up, was Rebellions. Top of the Hill, Market Street, East Street was on the right, left-hand side, Mortimer side, was controlled by the Mason murderers. And the leader of that particular crew was Marvin Bodie and now deceased Arlington Butler. And then on our end, we were the third major gang to be formed.
I see you transitioning. I want to know how this started. What made you go and join the gang?
Okay. That's how we started the major. I'm giving you time.
Yeah, I know. I appreciate it. Right. Okay. I appreciate it.
Now, what made us get to join the gang?
Yes.
I headed to D.W. Davis in 1986 after I graduated from T.A. Thompson. Rebellion Raiders was done form in D.W. Davis.
Yes.
And they wanted to merge everyone to be a part of the Rebellion Raiders.
Yes,
whether you like it or you didn't like it. Whatever you were from, they wanted you to join Rebellion Raiders. Well, you know, I was never afraid of nobody. So I live in Grandstand, which is Market Street. Market Street in between Market and East Street. And they started to molest and beat up anybody.
Yes.
Who were not a part of the group. Either you were them or you're against them. And we end up becoming a part of the gang. First of all, we started the gang. That's why I want to get to that. I was never in a gang. I started a gang.
Oh.
See, this is why I want to get to the point.
I understand.
You understand? So it was Santana Forbes, Giovanni Forbes, Preacher, Gonzo, Kendrick, my cousin, Slick, Slackness. These were the first five members of the Border Boys. The guy who named this group, named Dr. F, he's now deceased. And this is where I came in. I was the younger one with them. And I was there when F named it the border, we call it the borderline, then we call it the border boys. Mm-hmm. So I was there from inception. Mm-hmm. You understand? And that's how I joined the gang, because of the oppression going on with the next gang who taken over. And I didn't want to be a part of no Raiders because I live in Grandstand. Yes. So that's how come we formed the Border Boys, and that's how I became a part of the gang.
And I want to pause here to analyze that, because you know you're hearing the name Fire and Tough and Mad Ass and all that, right? And they are forcing children now to join because of their area. So you live in this area, you are a part of us. And I remember growing up, being younger than you are, right? And being forced to go to Donald Davis, which I thought was a school that had was infiltrated by gangs.
Yes.
I was already told, when you go to Donald Davis, you would have to become a rebellion raider. Mm-hmm. I was petrified.
Yes.
Right? I remember the term syndicate had me crying when I was younger. The name itself.
Yes.
Right? And I remember becoming a border boy without even knowing, because I wasn't in no gang.
Yes.
But through association, through living in an environment, it's either that or you die.
Yes.
And I'm not sure if our leaders understand what our children are going through. It's not that they want to join these gangs. No.
No.
You know, no. You're forced because of your environment. Mm-hmm. But continue your story. You're now about 11, 12, I assume.
You may have become a gang.
Joining the gang, transition the gang.
Well, it's actually 13.
13? So 13, grade 8, 13, grade 9.
13, no, younger than that. 12, you're correct.
Okay, 11,
yes, 12. Yes, because at the age we were already in junior high school.
Yes.
Yeah. And you want me to continue?
Go ahead, man.
Yeah, so we can start it off with Giovanni Forbes, Santana Forbes. They were the founders of the Border Boys. Then, you know, they were more like into drug boys. They wasn't really gangs. See the difference, gang boys. See the difference, what I don't understand today, Mr. Nuri, is the fact that drugs and gangs, that wasn't Ron back in our day.
And I want you to pause there again. Because if you're saying it wasn't around back in the day, that means the gangs that we have is different.
They merged.
From what we had back then.
They merged gang with drugs. That is a disaster. That can't work. You can't be a drug dealer and a gangster. That is a disaster. You set yourself up to go to jail or get killed. Simple as that. Anyone who's saying there's a drug dealer in this country and it's a gangster, you're a fool. Either you be a drug dealer and make money and avoid the police at all costs. Be a good Samaritan in your community. Keep the thief, the murderers, the rapists, and all those in the community away from that stuff and protect the community. You know, you don't chew up the place. You don't put hits on people. You know, drugs and gangs.
There's a mesh. There's a mesh. And I'm
go ahead.
I'm going to give you a memory. I'm not sure if you remember something called the White House.
Of course.
So I bring that memory up for you for a reason. Because I remember the Border Boys being a youth gang.
Yeah.
Right? Young boys who are trying to protect themselves from the other street gang.
That's what we were about.
Yes, right? But something happened. Something happened when this White House element came into your group.
Well, what happened, right? Animosity always come in gang. You understand? And for all the gangsters out there, let me tell you something. Your friends could be the one who could take you out. So let me tell you, all you who like man and believe niggas, some or everyone around you is your friend. Remember that they could take you because jealousy could take affair. See, when you talk about the White House, that was Douglas Johnson, dog. Mm-hmm. He is a part of the Border Boys. And most people wanted to branch off, you know, and start their own thing because, you know, the Border Boys and bling in now, he's a group. So everyone want to come with their own little group inside. But it was never a problem to us because I was dog and he was a big brother. But
and he's older.
Yeah, so they just gave himself a click to say they're in charge of the Border Boys and call it the White House and make that particular spot ready to the White House. You see? So it was that's how it was. The problem came in. You're talking about how it expands? What you want
to... what I'm trying to say is you were rock and bottle gang.
Rock and ball.
And all of a sudden, the White House come, and all of a sudden, there are guns all over the place.
Okay.
You know? I'm trying to
zen in. Okay, let's go. Okay, when we was in 1986, you know, it was a rock and ball thing, okay? But then the guns started to come in. You know?
Where the guns come from, basically? General.
Or you want me to be honest?
Yeah.
Okay. Me, personally, I used to buy guns from the cruise ship.
You bought guns from the cruise ship?
Yeah, the cruise
from
ship.
From somebody or?
The attendants who come on the cruise ship that come to the Bahamas. Mm-hmm. You know, most of us used to buy them off the cruise ship.
Describe that transaction in terms of, I want a gun. A gun to the cruise ship. Like, how did you know to go?
No.
How did you pay?
No.
You know?
It was like this.
No, not too detailed to get you in problems.
No, it can't get me no problem because this is my life, man. This is my life. I've been living this. And if this change the country and give some information to the general public, so be it. You know? This is a plus to the Royal Bahamas Police Force. This is a plus to society. This is education.
Mm-hmm.
This is my life. It's how I live. No one can tell me no other thing.
So the guns come on a cruise ship.
Okay, for instance, my friend Santana Forbes, and he is listening right now. He was the drug boy. He used to sell all the coke and the weed. So people would come to him from the cruise ship who would say, I'm from Florida.
Yes.
Blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
Transaction happened. They bring it back, bring 25, 380, 9mm. And we have access to that.
That's real gun. Dino 22s.
Huh?
That's real gun. Dino 22s.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
They is powerful, man. Them 22 back in the days ain't playing, man.
Yeah. We call them pop-pop.
Yeah. Smith & Wesson.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and I want to, and I'm going back with your story because I want to compare it to what is happening today. I just recently, we had 6 persons died on the street. One time, shoot up. We don't know, no leads, right? Mm-hmm. And the police are saying it's gang-related. And now we have a spat of murders happening all over, popping up all over Nassau. Every week, there's one or two. And they're all saying it's gang-related, right? And I'm trying to say, is it about drugs? Is it about turf? You know? Because I want to understand what's happening. How can we help?
It's all of them combined together. You understand? It's all combined together, what you talked about. Everything you said is actually the effects.
So let me read some text. I think fathers and mothers who are present are a part of the solution, a big part. But there are also children who have good mothers and fathers, but they still don't get what they need. The parents are physically there, but they don't have the insight or knowledge to address the specific needs of this. And of course, there needs to be intervention.
Yes.
A number of our parents need help.
Of course.
They're broken.
They're broken. They're more than broken.
You know? And they're poor and they're desperate. And if government and NGOs do not intervene...
Then let's keep up these things. You just talk about all these murders and stuff. And let's stop having this conversation because it's going to continue in the country.
Okay. Another text says, I like the realness of this brother. He is 100 all the time. And I encourage him to keep up his efforts. Every day is a day of growth. All right?
Thank you.
Thanks. This one says, Pussycat Neil was Aaron Roll. Mm-hmm. Him and Martin Butcher started the syndicates.
That's what I see.
Then Squaw.
Squaw, that's what I talk about, Squaw. Uh-huh. See?
Don't forget, everybody.
See, he's correct. Yeah. So you know I know.
He lists a whole list of names.
So you see, I know the names.
Okay, right?
I'm a founder member of gangsters in the country. There's no police or no one in this country could give you more information than me. I was a top gangster in the country.
And mind you, one of the texts asked me, have you ever assisted in terms of crime, task force, or anything?
Oh.
And you have been. Go ahead. Just talk about that.
Let me just tell you
briefly.
There's so much positive in me. I've been working with the Ministry of National Security for over 20 years. Many have lost past, you see, dealing with second chance, intervention, small business, all those stuff. Local government, introducing the local government. I was on the floor doing all this stuff. So there's a lot of positive to me. I'm just talking from how I came from. Even with the Overhead Initiative, which is the Urban Design Lab, I was instrumental in building and designing that for this country, to deal with crime in this country.
So you've put in the work.
I put in so much work. I put in more work than just about anyone when it comes to the crime, helping over the crime, finding solutions. And you need to see the work that I'm doing in my community in Grandstand.
And we can talk about that. And this may have to be a 2-part show. So, because there's so many questions I want to ask. You know?
Go ahead. And
this texter again say, man, you need to be a crime disruptor. And I that's what I call you. You're my crime disruptor because I've watched you commit to programs within your community.
Yeah.
I've sponsored one or two initiatives in your community. I've seen you invest time, treasure, and talent and expense in your community. I've seen you network, drive all the way to Life of Key, begging and pleading, and they coming down and helping you. I've seen this.
Yes.
I've seen the partnership which you have done in success.
Yes.
So I would encourage government to come and see you because you know the narrative of the streets.
Yes.
You know the names of some of the individuals involved, and you also can appreciate their story of why. Mm-hmm. And I don't necessarily think that our leaders understand us in the city. That why we are crying and why we are not working. That why we are broken in some ways, and that we need some assistance or we will continue to be broken and raise havoc on the street.
Yes, it's simple. Look at the inner city communities. We have 5,000 kids coming to school every year. We have high employment now or over 50%. That's a devastation to us. You know how much people are unemployed right now as we speak? Mm-hmm. Me and you talking right now. Mm-hmm. Can government find jobs for them? No.
No.
There's
so,
no
creative. So what do you do, though? If they can't find jobs, you got
to
do something.
Listen and go back to the urban design lab where we can build up these communities. But why community centers?
So we need community centers?
Yes. To train the people on our discipline.
This government committed to that?
Yes. We have a lot of abandoned houses in these communities. If you look, there are thousands of
homes. So you're saying the government should take the abandoned houses and
take
do something
those, refurnish those, give the a family, a single parent family.
I want to pause you there again because you live off Hay Street, right? You see that there's a number of abandoned buildings. I try to call his name. What the rum person name again?
Audley Camp.
Audley Camp has about 1,000 buildings, all empty. Yes. Or from East Street North all to East Street South.
My point.
And nothing inside happening. Yes. So you're trying to say that perhaps government needs to investigate how they can refurbish one or two of these buildings.
A lot of those buildings. Some of these buildings can turn into small businesses for residents in that particular community.
Because we have a housing problem.
Yeah, just there's a structure, well, two-story building. You look at it and you say to yourself, no, if we fix this, we design this, people need work, need to be in power, need to start small businesses. We can say, you know what? Let's put in there a barber shop. Let's put in a cosmetology shop. You know, we might even have a dentist who probably we could install him down to the bottom now. And then we give the options of that particular community who reside in that community a square box and let them pick and choose on which business they'd like to start in the community. That's one step. Then you have community policing. Bring in local government.
You will have solutions.
Yes, I'm doing all this now.
You know?
Simple.
We're going to have a commercial break.
All right.
I'm talking to Scroogey Valentino Brown, former leader of the Border Boys, who is giving insight on what we need to do to solve this gang problem. Right? And he's telling his story on why he joined a gang, the frustrations he went through, the hardships he went through. And this echoes throughout the whole Bahamas because there are people, young boys who are about 16, 17 in Eggleston, going through the same thing he went through. And the only solution they find right now is that my gang friends help me out. They support me when I go down the road to school. That the only friend they have right now is their gun. And they can rob and kill to get what they need. They can bust their gun. We're going to be right back. This is Guardian Radio in the morning.
Nobody knows. Look into
my eyes. Here we go. J.S. Johnson Insurance agents are the best. Reliable service, we've been on the scene, protecting since 1919. J.S. Johnson Insurance has the best, always. You're always covering me. J.S. Johnson Insurance, peace of mind.
The new Guardian Radio app is here. Listen live to all our Guardian Radio shows and live video stream select programs in our studio. Get information about Guardian Radio shows and our hosts. Send messages, including text, email, and even call. All from our amazing new Guardian Radio app. Download it free today in your App Store for your Apple device or Play Store for your Android device. The all-new and improved Guardian Radio app.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Here's my ghetto story.
This is a survival story.
Been a hell through the fire. Gonna take it higher. Here's my survival story.
This
So many reasons to sing now.
Yes.
Now we got the keys to the kingdom.
I remember those days when hell was my home, when me and mama bed was a big piece of foam, and me never like bathe and my ear never comb. When mama gonna work, me go street go roam. I remember when Danny them get my snow cone and make him lick a bread at them, kick up Jerome. I remember when we visit them with pure big stone and the boy Danny pop out something we're full chrome. I remember when we run, but I get him knee blown and my best friend Richie get doing I'm dome. I remember.
I remember when. Actually, this song resonated with me because I remember being poor growing up. I remember my mother, because I grew up in a single mother home, single parent home, until my stepfather moved in. And I was jealous of him, so why are you trying to take my old lady? You know. But I remember in that big king-size mattress, right? I remember when we didn't have enough. And I said, Mommy, I, as a boy child, I need to find a job at 10. I said, I'm going to go to Super Value. And I remember they said, you're too young. And I said, well, how old are you supposed to be? So you got to be 13. And I said, I need to work. So if you need me to be 13, I am a short 13-year-old. But my mommy need this $25 to pay the ASU in order for me to go to school. Because I remember those days back in the day, right? I remember coming outside and seeing the border boys walking and declaring and marking their territory. I remember when Chicken got shot down.
Yeah, I got shot on the side of me.
And I remember y'all running, and they had, I think, that donkey. That was, who was shooting. It was a war.
That was Franz Pascal. He was the second in charge of the Rebellion Raiders after Kelsey Lundy.
Mm-hmm. I remember they had y'all on the run because border had no gun. Yeah. But the...
No, we had guns now.
But I ain't going to call all them names.
No,
so leave that alone.
No, we had guns. It's just that you didn't see the guns. No, yeah. We had plenty of guns.
I don't remember border being that violent. Yeah. But I remember rebellions trying to infiltrate, trying to spread onto border territory. And it became violent.
Yeah.
Nassau was a violent place.
Of course.
And I remember some years ago, we had a conversation. And I said, there aren't any gangs in the Bahamas anymore because I feel safe. I remember growing up, I didn't feel safe because I couldn't go anywhere. I remember being terrified to go to school.
You should.
And apparently, it's happening again.
Of course.
When they're school children.
Fighting like the way they can, huh?
Terrified.
Yeah.
When I remember there was a group called She-Bellions and Border Girls.
Yes.
Where there are girl children who are just as violent.
They used to get a gun to us. People. And the knives to us anywhere we go in the clubs.
You know? But let me read this. On the internet, I found a UN Refugee Agency report, which is dated July 15, 2016. And the producer of this is Canada. They say Immigration and Refugee Board of Canada. And there's an overview of activities. So let me just read the preamble of it because it's like a 18 to 20 page document. So according to police superintendent and head of the Central Detective Unit, as quoted by Bahamian newspaper Nassau Guardian, the Bahamas has several gangs. And the One Order Gang is the most organized. They have a date stamp, Nassau Guardian, May 6, 2013. The Bahamas's Minister of State for National Security described the One Order Gang as a criminal enterprise, quoted Freeport News, 28 October 2015. According to Bahamian news source, the Tribune, One Order has a very violent reputation, date May 26, 2015. Without providing details or a time frame, the Minister of State for National Security stated that One Order is the most violent gang in the Bahamas and was responsible for more than 200 murders, cited Freeport News, October 28, 2015. Sources indicate that the One Order gang has international ties. See, I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
Nassau Guardian, May 6, 2013. The Tribune, May 26, 2015, same date, and is active in Jamaica.
Mm-hmm.
The One Order Gang is active in Jamaica. For information about the One Order Gang in Jamaica, see response to information request, and they give a site, some kind of notation. Mm-hmm. I didn't know they even had Jamaican connection. According to the Bahamas Journal, a Bahamian newspaper, the One Order Gang has been involved with an ongoing feud with Fire and Theft Gang, a criminal organization whose alleged leader was shot to death on April 2013. And then they cite another date, April 2013 again. And I read all of that because there is a narrative of gangs.
And there's an international body who's keeping tabs of gangs in the Bahamas. Mm-hmm. And they've written a report. And this report actually cite the leaders.
Yeah.
And cite the leaders, where they are in prison, where they're dead, and what they're doing in prison.
Mm-hmm.
And the problems they're doing there. But I want to talk about, again, you growing up around 15, 16 in the border gang, right? And your relations with the police. How did you feel about the police? Because I want this to help our leaders to say, this is what our youth are thinking. What did you think of the police?
Listen, the police ain't even close to being as rough as they was back in the day.
So there's worse back in the day.
There's a joke what the police is now.
Mm-hmm.
All right? Back in the day, you would get beat dead bad in the streets in Arsenal, Providence, if the police is looking for you, whether you're innocent or not. Like I said, the police had a no tolerance for the society because there are so much violent crimes happening in these communities.
Do you endorse that type of policing?
And what kind of policing?
That no tolerance, slap down.
That's what got us the way we are now and started to rebel.
So you're saying you don't believe in that violent type police?
I'm violent, and the police is violent. How is this going to work out?
That causes war and conflict.
How is it going to work out? You tell me how this is going to work out. How?
So there needs, you support a community-type policing.
I am all for community-type policing. And let me show you. Let me tell you why the police ain't even as serious as they is today, back in the day. The officers I had to deal with, listen to these names.
Mm-hmm.
Former Assistant Commissioner of Police, Guard Johnson. Former Superintendent of Police, Douglas Hano. Chief Superintendent of Police, former Chief Superintendent of Police, Warrie Sanders. Now, Assistant Commissioner of Police, Mr. Solomon Cash. Now, Superintendent Mark Barrett. Deceased now, Sergeant Big Drew. All right? Even Mr. Richardson, I look up. These were the officers.
I had a run-in with Big Drew, but I can tell that story.
And let me just tell you something. These officers give you one warning.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They're going to tell you if you want it, come to the station. All right? Off your own free will. They stop you in the road now and tell someone to tell Scoochie come to the station. Well, you don't have to go to the station. Well, you stay home and don't go. Then you would find exactly how Mr. Douglas Hanna, former Big Chief, or Warrie Sanders, or anyone in that CID department come for you. And then you'll see what happened to you. So the experience, you know, was great because we had a relationship and I respected those guys. And I would say over the course, it's starting to be realizing the problem. We're going to have to address it. And what I mean, we don't address it, that attitude that police have where they could go in citizens' face and be disrespectful to them over a traffic stop or invading their homes or being disrespectful just by have an interaction and not de-escalation situation, that is not appropriate in this country no more. We have to get rid of that.
Screw it, I already hear the music, so that means I got to bring you back. I hope you mind to do. You think Warren will allow me a good 15 minutes, a good 20 minutes to continue this? let me join him and say, hey, no, let's finish talk about Scrooge for 15 minutes.
No,
let's
conclude that. Good.
But I know one time you met Sir Lyndon Pinglin when he had you met with all the gang members.
Yes.
I want to talk about that because that helped solve the gang relations.
Yes.
Then I want to talk about how jobs and prosperity happened with Atlantis. And then that helped solve the situation.
Yes.
And see, I'm saying these things because I need our leaders to understand what happened in the 90s. It's starting in the 2000s. That basically solved this gang problem we had.
Yeah. It did. So Lyndon Pinglin did an awesome job of pulling all the leaders together. He pulled in Kelsey Lundy, who was the leader of the Raiders at the time. Even pulling Marvin Bodie. He pulled us in the Border
Scrooge
Boys.
Scrooge, we all the time.
Yeah, I know.
I had a story to be all the time,
yeah,
Scrooge.
Okay. So it's a pleasure.
Thank you very much for coming. I'm going to invite you back.
That'd be good.
I want to hear your transition from to young boy. That first time you go back to prison, you know? But this has been Guardian Radio in the AM. Thanks very much, producer, for letting me say the last 2 minutes. And we'll see you back again.
Okay, my pleasure.
Everywhere I go, a man wants some part of me. Dirty, dirty, hookers and hoes on 11th.